WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. The Bay Area Women's Philharmonic is an orchestra with a mission to perform neglected historical works by women and to perform new compositions by women. The orchestra is entering its second decade. My guest Joanne Folletta is beginning her sixth season as its conductor. She's also the music director of the Long Beach Symphony Orchestra and the Virginia Symphony. Before joining the Women's Philharmonic, she had won the Stokowski, Toscanini, and Bruno Walter Awards. The Women's Philharmonic has one recording, Baroquen Treasures, featuring music by 18th-century women composers. This composition, Sinfonia in C, was written by Marianne Martinez in 1770.
When you're looking at a piece from the early 18th century written by a woman, you're looking at a piece composed by a woman who has not had the benefit very often of significant training, compositional training. You're looking at a woman who's relying on essentially raw talent and that alone to create this piece. So as a conductor, you have to be even more creative about helping it work to the best of its abilities. And that's a great challenge. It's a great challenge to come up with a piece that's never been played, that you can't hear on a recording, that has errors in it, that perhaps, you know, needs work in certain areas, and to get that to the point where it can be a very successful performance.
You became the conductor of the Bay Area Women's Philharmonic in 1985. You'd already won several prestigious conducting awards. Did you ever have any reservations about accepting the Women's Philharmonic invitation? Did you think perhaps that conducting a women's orchestra would in its own way narrow your career because you'd be perceived as like an advocate of women's music rather than a conductor who could do anything?
Well, you know, Terry, I did have some reservations, I have to be honest, because first of all, I didn't know anything about music written by women. My training as a conductor had been very traditional. I mean, and I learned the established standard repertoire of the orchestral world. And when I was first approached by the Women's Philharmonic, I had a feeling that, well, what is this music? And could it really be any good? And it wasn't until I went out and took a look at scores and worked with the orchestra that I began to realize that this was a wealth of repertoire that was really good and very interesting to me. And I guess I didn't worry really about being typecast as a conductor, although I know that conductors do get typecast, but I think I've been lucky in that I've been able to work on a great deal of standard repertoire as well. Although now when I do guest conduct, very often people will specifically ask me, please do a piece by a woman or please bring one of the pieces from the Women's Philharmonic for our program.
You've said that when you were studying conducting with George Mester at Juilliard, that he showed you ways in which you were undermining your authority as a conductor. What did he point out to you that you were doing?
Working with George was very, very valuable for me because he had never trained a woman as a conductor because there was just so few of us. He became very aware of the fact that women are trained by society to be nurturing and not always to be demanding or expecting of excellence. So he pointed out to me ways in which I was using language, perhaps, in a manner that undermined my authority, or perhaps using an apologetic approach to the orchestra that again undermined my authority. He helped me see that I had to get rid of some of the trappings of what I had learned as a young girl growing up and learned to be more demanding, again, in a way that was comfortable for me.
Can you give me some examples of things that you stopped doing?
Yeah, well, he pointed out that very often I and women in general would use words like just and only in an apologetic way. For instance, I would say to the orchestra, well, let's just try it one more time. And he pointed out that none of my male colleagues would use well or just in that sentence. They would say, we'll do it again. And that kind of difference in language made me realize that perhaps I was uncomfortable with demanding. And yet, I had to learn to do that because that's what a conductor does.
In the orchestras that you've conducted outside of the Women's Philharmonic, do you feel that you were called on to prove yourself in ways that a man might not have been asked to?
Well, in almost all the orchestras that I've worked with, I have been the first and in many times the only woman that the orchestra has experienced on the podium. So yes, I think there has been a proving period. Orchestras in general tend to be suspicious of conductors, and you know they want to be sure that they're working with someone who's utilizing their time well, you know. So the fact that it was a woman engendered a kind of excitement, I'm sure, and also kind of feeling, well, let's see what she can do. So I felt that I had to be more well-prepared probably than any of my male colleagues, and I had to work in a way that was extremely professional. And what I found is that musicians respond in an extremely professional way, and I haven't encountered the overt kind of prejudice that perhaps we feared.
You say that musicians are often suspicious of guest conductors. Is it like a substitute teacher, you know, where we don't behave as well?
It is. And, you know, in conductors in general, you have to realize that to be a musician in an orchestra is not a natural progression, because when one is studying at Juilliard or at Curtis, you're not studying to play second violin last stand. You're studying to be another Isaac Perlman. You're studying to be a soloist. And then life, you know, works itself out, and there you are in an orchestra playing in the second violin section. But you still have those same desires. You still have that same kind of spirit of individuality. And then here comes the conductor, who is essentially going to be telling 90 or 100 people how to play it and what to do and how to phrase. So you can see that the role of a conductor is potentially a very difficult one, because you have to convince that group of great musicians, all of whom have their own ideas about how to do it your way and how to feel good about that. So I think orchestras in general tend to judge conductors rather harshly because of that, because they have such strong musical integrity of their own.
What do you wear when you're conducting for a performance?
Well, you know, the issue of what a woman wears on the podium is something that still has not been resolved, and I have to answer that by saying that in different parts of the country, I wear different clothing. My concern is always that whatever I'm wearing be non-obtrusive and enable people to listen rather than watch. And that's the reason, of course, why orchestra musicians wear black, because it is an oral experience, and we don't want to be distracting by what we wear. In San Francisco, for instance, I very often wear tails. And that, for a conductor, is the most comfortable, least limiting, least constraining costume or outfit, and it enables me to be very professional and to work well.
This is tails with pants or with a skirt?
Tails with pants.
Oh.
In other parts of the country, that hasn't been as well accepted. And so when I'm conducting in, let's say, Texas or Virginia or Georgia, I will wear probably a black skirt and white blouse and jacket, or a black dress with a jacket. Again, it's my aim is to make people feel comfortable so that they get beyond the idea that there's a woman on the podium and into what the music sounds like.
So if you wear tails in some parts of the country, do they think you're cross-dressing or something?
People have said that. It's so strange to me. People have mentioned that, you know, and I've always said, you know, this is a professional outfit for a musician, and it doesn't mean anything about, you know, men or women. It just means that this enables me to utilize the motions that a conductor needs to use and to do it in a non-distracting way. But again, I think it still is an issue that hasn't been resolved for women on the podium, and maybe won't be for a number of years until we have enough women, perhaps, that a standard dress or outfit evolves.
My guest is Joanne Folletta, conductor of the Bay Area Women's Philharmonic. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Conductor Joanne Folletta is my guest. When you started studying conducting, were you ever discouraged from pursuing it because you were a woman?
Well, yeah, because, you know, I made up my mind to be a conductor when I was 13, and I didn't know at that time that women didn't conduct. It just didn't occur to me. I guess I was very naive. My parents were not musicians, professional musicians, so they didn't know. And the first I heard of that was when I was 18 and I entered the Manus College of Music in New York as a classical guitarist. And I told them that I wanted to study conducting. And they said, well, you know, women don't do that. And I said, well, why not? And they said, well, it's just never been done. I mean, it's just not something that would be accepted. So it took me an entire year to convince them to give me a chance to study. And that was the beginning for me, because then I was able to study formally. I was able to conduct my school orchestra. I was able to make progress and eventually go on to Juilliard, where I got my master's and my doctorate. And again, I think there was some reservation about, can a woman really be a successful symphonic conductor? But I'm really very grateful to them for taking that chance.
What were the stereotypes you were up against, the stereotypes of why a woman can't conduct?
Well, I think people still had in mind the image of someone like Toscanini as a conductor, someone who, well, first of all, was European. I mean, and Americans always struggle with that. Secondly, was a total autocrat, someone who could, you know, hire and fire people at will, who would throw batons at members of the orchestra, who would have temper tantrums. The idea of a woman behaving in that way was not one in which with which people felt comfortable. And I still think that women on the podium have to be very careful about how they use anger to inspire people. I'm not sure that it works as well for women at this time in our society as it does for men. But coming up against that image of like a Toscanini or a Bruno Walter or Herbert von Karajan, for women it was a challenging step. And I think as the image of a conductor changed, at least in our country, as we began to realize that conductors needed to work in a more collegial way with their musicians, not necessarily less demanding, but more respectful, that the door opened for women.
Do you think that you're more careful about how you use anger because you're a woman?
Definitely. Definitely.
How?
Well, I've played in orchestras, and I must tell you that I've, you know, as a young person playing cello and looking up at the conductor and the conductor getting angry at us, I found was a very powerful motivator. You know, he was angry and we had to do better. We had to please him. I found watching women that anger usually takes away from their authority. And I can't say exactly why that is. But there is still a strong discomfort level in our country and all over the world with seeing a woman expressing anger. So I found that for myself, I can use other emotions more effectively. I can use disappointment. I can use high expectation level. I can use, being demanding in the sense of wanting the very best for the sake of the music more effectively than if I got angry and indicated that in a way that, you know, a man might still be able to do with some good effect. I don't think it's fair, but that's the way it is.
Since you're not playing familiar works, whether the works are old or new, these are basically newly discovered, that means that the women in your orchestra have to learn new things all the time, perhaps more so than your regular orchestra would need to, because there is a certain amount of familiar music in the repertoire that's played at your typical concert. But not for
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. And I think this is what makes the orchestra so remarkable, because we are asking the members of the Women's Philharmonic to play new pieces every concert. Every piece is new. We're asking them very often to read from manuscript, that is not printed music, but the composer's own handwriting. We've asked them, and let's say in the case of Lily Boulanger, who's writing during a very serious illness, I mean, at the end of her young life, to read from her handwriting, which is extraordinarily difficult, yet these musicians are willing to do that. We're also asking a lot of our audience, Terry, when you think about it, because we are asking people to come into a concert not to hear Beethoven, not to hear pieces that they know, but to hear four or five absolutely new pieces, first time hearing for all of them. And I think it takes a great deal of trust on their part to come to that. And they are extremely receptive. They are the best audience, really, that I've encountered, because they are equally excited about hearing a piece by Fanny Mendelssohn as they are by hearing a piece by a composer who is 22 years old and just starting out.
The Bay Area Women's Philharmonic has one album of 18th century Baroque composers. And I'd like to end our interview by playing an excerpt of a piece that you are the featured lute soloist on. And this is a piece by the composer Camilla De Rossi. It was composed in 1709. Would you tell us a little bit about this and about why you wanted to perform it?
Well, this is a wonderful example of a composer who's totally unknown, who is a very, very gifted composer. This is a instrumental selection from The Sacrifice of Abraham, you know, written, of course, on the Bible story of Abraham and Isaac. And I was particularly charmed by it because the lute in the piece represents the angel who first appears to Abraham and tells him that he must sacrifice his son, and then, of course, at the very last moment, reappears and says that since Abraham has shown so much faith, he doesn't have to do it now. And the work, I think, is a wonderful piece, and I'm very, very proud that we found this work. It had never been recorded before, and I'm pleased to have been the soloist on it.
Well, before we hear this piece, let me say thank you very much for talking with us. And good
luck
with your new season.
Thank you very much.
The Bay Area Women's Philharmonic begins its second decade this weekend at the Herbst Theater in San Francisco. The orchestra will make its East Coast debut at the Kennedy Center in January as part of the National Organization for Women's 25th anniversary celebration. This is Fresh Air.